to do, ask them how we were doing. You know, is the print plant okay? Do you like your cars? Do the phones work? That kind of stuff. But we just said we were coming for a visit. And when we got there, Dr. Majorhart had all his key staff people there, and they looked tense. And we sat down and said why we're there, and he said, wait a minute, I want to tell you how relieved I am. He said, I was afraid to call and ask why you were coming, because when I heard that Dave White and Kate Wood were coming, I knew we were in trouble. They just thought that we were coming to say how bad they were doing. They were really doing pretty good. The agencies had to do all the work, really. We had to urge them to do the right things and give them the information and give them the right premiums, and then they turned around and began to work on it and work hard. SAFE, at the same time, greatly improved its claims practices. It's a different SAFE today than it was a few years ago. And the special session reformed work comp. You put all those things together, and there is nobody who cannot take some credit for what's happened in work comp, because it's been a major group effort. The agencies have done 1,000 different things. I wouldn't even hope to try to tell you what they've done. Each one has been different. But most of them have recognized that if they don't have good relations with their labor union, if they don't have managers that know what their job is and how to do it in this modern age, and if they don't hold managers accountable for safety, they can't get the job done. But they did that. And so we found these kinds of numbers at this time. Instead of 4,112 lost time claims, we expect to have 1,500 in this biennium.
What were those numbers again?
4,112 was the forecast. 1,500 is the expectation right now, with just a few months to go. Losses under 67 million instead of 142 million. By the way, you only budgeted 106 million. So losses have come in under that. Now, I want to differentiate between costs and premiums, because they're not always the same thing. As I showed you with the liability, we have carry forwards and other things that will cause premiums to be different than cost in a given year. But over time, they work out to be the same thing. This is the premium story on the screen now, which is also in your material there. And it just shows you, now if you extended this line right on up, that's where the costs were going. This is the only year in which we actually charged what the actuary said to charge. It's the only year we did it. And the agencies did so well in improving workers' compensation costs that this is the result that's hot off the press. It's not in your books, but I'll give you a copy. There's the 1188 actuarial forecast. Where we were headed, you can see, just heads into outer space. The new lines are the actuarial forecast that we currently have in draft. We're critiquing it. It'll take us about a week to finalize and accept it. But that's the results of where we're at after 2 years and a few months.
Well,
Senator Fubish.
Let me see if I understand it. What was, can you put this well, a little bit confusing, isn't it? I'm a little bit confused. You guys may not be, but
perpetually.
Thank you. The actual premium savings.
This is premium.
If you compensate for your carryover, I mean, what do we?
Right. I'll show you the numbers here, and in fact, I'll change them slightly. These last four are the biennium we're in and the biennium to come. We charged $63 million because that's what the actuary said the losses would be for that year.
Okay.
Now let me show you the cost so you'll see what actually happened. If you look at that year, which is 91, mm-hmm. you can see that instead of 70 or so when you add it all up, that we actually came in under, or will come in well under $40 million in that year.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, nobody knew that back in 89.
$63 million was what year?
Let's see, we're talking 91 here.
Okay, in 91 your costs were what?
The costs were,
projected
backwards, making sure I've got them right.
Yeah.
89.90, excuse me, it's the 90.
89.90, yeah. Projected to be 63.
That's right, they were projected at that point, and you can see it here, 90. And so they were projected to be over $60 million, and we collected at the amount that the actuary said, even though we felt we were working like the Dickens and it would come down, but we knew we could charge less the next year. So we charged heavily in the first year of the biennium in the hopes that agencies would come through in the second, and they did.
What did you charge in 91?
I'll show you right here. These are the actual premiums. So the premiums were the full amount in 90. The next year, the one we're in right now, we dropped to 38. And we anticipated a few months ago that next biennium, instead of 96 million, which is what we told the agencies to budget a year ago. You know, the problem with workers' comp is you're always making estimates about what it's going to be because we're working too far ahead on this thing. When did we actually put together rates? April of last year. Yeah, so in April of 90, we're having to tell the agencies what 91 through 93 are going to cost. April of 90, yeah. And we don't know at that point, but we went with where the forecast appeared to be headed, and it was 96 million. We did an interim update a few months ago of some years and brought it down from 96 to this, which is 44 million. Now the newest report, which has just arrived and updates the complete data, will probably bring it down to about 30 million.
That's the biennial cost?
That'll be next biennium's premium.
Wait a minute, 30 million, you just scratched the 16, 15
million. Yeah, 15 on each year. So 30 million for the biennium.
So the price will be 2015? 15
and 15.
Awesome.
So these will both drop from 22 to 15.
It does change a little bit.
Now that doesn't mean our costs in the long run are coming down to that. I'll have to put back and forth between these. Because what they're saying for those years, 92 and 93, is that costs are going to probably run, by the latest estimate, around 80 million. 90 million. But the reason that our premiums are only going to be about 30 million is because we were headed this away and we collected premiums based on this, and we dropped the floor out. We didn't need the money for that, so we have to carry it forward and reduce premiums. Okay. Obviously, we have to. There's really no other.
If you didn't have, if you didn't have any carry forward, what would your actual premium be in 92, 93?
It would be, you know, and I didn't. Just that way, yeah, I can tell you roughly it would be about 65 million.
Well, wait, it was, see, it was
for the biennium.
Okay, well, it was, and what was it in 88, 89?
Let me double check.
Are you
Excuse me, I'm sorry. We have about 80 or 90 million in losses forecast for that biennium. There's a discount for interest. Probably it would be around 70 million. In the coming biennium, if we didn't have the carry forward.
And it was how much, if we hadn't made, what was it projected before?
Projection, if we hadn't done that, is that 92 and 93 would be up here, that would be
190, 200 million.
Yeah,
like,
okay. A heck of a lot of millions.
Mr. White, I see the trend is still continuing upward even.
I don't know how much you believe that. I'm not convinced that the agencies are through pulling it down. If you're an actuary, you're looking at 15 years of data. And the story for 13 years, was steady increases in injuries and costs.
Is this assuming some inflation in medical costs?
It does. It covers all of those issues. But they were looking at there, that's the way they saw it for 13 years. This is the way it's looked for 24 or 36 months. So they're still being conservative about where they think it's going. They still think the trend will be up. We haven't quit coming down, I don't think.
So we have the potential at least of bringing it down and stabilizing it, right?
In fact, that's an important issue because as you look at the 93-95 biennium, which are the last two cost figures out here, there can't be any carry forward to there. The feds won't let us keep money and carry forward beyond the next biennium. We have to use it now or give it back to them. And so when we look out here, there's no subsidy, no carry forward. We'll have to pay the full cost there. They're saying figures of about 100 million. That probably translates into about 80 million or 70 million in premiums if their forecast is right. I think what will happen is during the next 2 years, we'll keep fighting the battle and pull this down a little. I can't tell you how much. But it probably means that had we not had the confusion introduced by carry forwards, you could say that these are where our premiums would have been, and these are where our premiums would be without the carry forward.
Do we have an idea how we're doing compared to the rest of industry?
Statewide, workers' comp costs are coming down the last few months, maybe the last 8 or 10, largely because of the special session and the attention that's given to it. But our experience is just like that of many mills and other industries out there who did a lousy job of handling their worker injuries in the past and started getting it together. If you look at what the state was really doing during those 13 years, they really let it happen, whatever happened out there. And so we had agencies that just weren't doing anything about it, and now they are. We're doing, and I know that we're doing much better than the statewide average, far, far better, but it's not a surprise. When we first looked at it, we talked to agencies or companies out there who could show us that they had started managing workers' compensation and had 50 and 60% reductions in cost.
Senator, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to, you mentioned something that kind of clicked in my brain, and I need some clarification on it. That was the feds won't let us. What do the feds have to do with?
Well, about 60% of the money is federal money.
Oh, I see.
And so they're saying if you charge a premium for workers' compensation, we'd like to see that you use it that way. And they originally wanted us to not have a carry forward beyond 1 year. We met with the auditors and argued that we have a biennial budget program. We should go by biennials.
Okay. Couldn't you theoretically rebate the funds back to the agencies and then charge them back for actual costs?
We did ask the Attorney General that question and because of the property surplus that have been there for a decade. And the answer was no, we don't have any authority under the law to rebate it. You could write a law that way. If it were done, then the rebate back would have to be done very carefully to make the federal auditors assured that we weren't moving any money out of their categories.
So we have an advantage in interest?
The only advantage would be that what Dan Simmons and I talked about this, what we'd ideally like to have would be very stable premiums. We'd like to not dip to 30 and then pop up to 60 or 70. But on the other hand, agencies tend to think in biennial pieces. And when you add the Measure 5 uncertainties, there's a lot of uncertainty about the 93-95 budget period. This probably is not any bigger one than any other.
Going to get a whole lot uglier.
Yeah.
Let me see if I understand this. This is very good news. Not an otherwise good week. so I want to take advantage of it. Looking at those are very nice figures. Tell me one more time. I got two of the points that you made as to why this happened. One was good labor relations, and the other was making the managers responsible. Was there
leadership setting the priority is a major one. There really are a series of about 8 parts to the marketing plan that we developed for this, and it had a role for everybody, and they played it. I left out a lot of detail. SAFE, for example, gave us 3, sometimes 5 people that worked under our direction and consulted with the agencies in a coordinated manner, telling them what we wanted them to say. The Department of Insurance and Finance in the last year loaned us a person to also help us in that effort, and will continue.
And what did you do with those people?
We use those people to go out to agencies and tell them what they could do that they hadn't been doing. And in that area, there are probably 2 or 3. One was to begin managing safety, removing hazards. Take what we do at General Services in that regard. Dan's been real clear that we don't just pay for safety when we can afford it. Safety is an integral part of what you do. And we don't run people into the mines to let them die just because we want to get coal out of it. Instead, they should be able to go into the mine, get the coal, come out, and go home. And so we spend the money where we need to remove hazards. So that's one piece of it. And there are many aspects to that. One's listening to your workers. You know, if you're going to remove safety hazards, then you got to listen to the people that are doing the job, because they very often have awfully good ideas. The second one, I think, is early return to work. Early return to work probably, in my mind, is one of the biggest in the group of methods. Because in early return to work, we're not talking come back in a few days or a few months. We're saying come back in a few hours. And so what you have, Kate Wood told me of a case she overheard out of Fairview one day. And we know this wouldn't have happened a few years ago. A worker was home because of an injury, and the manager for that worker was on the phone to that person. That would have never happened. They'd have left it to personnel or somebody else. And the manager was talking to that worker about, can you come back and will the doctor let you do this and this? And the worker was obviously trying to get back, saying, well, I think I could do this, and why don't we ask the doctor that? What you had was a team effort there. The worker wanted back, the manager was actively participating. Early return to work means that you don't drop people off into what is called the land of the lost by a lot of people, where there's nobody there but workers' compensation, attorneys and chiropractors and doctors and SAFE and all those folks. Instead, you get them right back into the workplace and you help them stay active.
You're messing with my chiropractors.
Yeah.
The senior.
I have the college in my
name. Those are two good concrete examples. Are those?
I think those are the biggest by far. Clearly another piece was the premiums. At Fairview, for example, they were paying a premium that was about 9% of their payroll. They were producing 48% of the state's losses. They had 4% of the state's staff. And so what we did under our premium plan is we moved their premiums to 47% of their payroll. And in effect said to management, if you'd like to spend half your payroll on workers' compensation, that's fine. And we didn't say it nasty or anything. I mean, it's just
you don't have to.
Yeah,
exactly. That's pretty clear.
Fairview will continue to be.
This was added on to the other payroll, so they were looking at a 75-80% OPE factor.
I think that another element is that there are at least a few managers that were removed from state government, some at fairly high levels, that there probably were a number of reasons, but I'm sure one of them was that they couldn't manage this issue, didn't feel they could, and they're gone, and the new people are managing this issue at every agency. We have right now, I don't think, a bad boy out there. We may have an agency right now that has more time loss claims this year than last year, but we can't say they're, you know, that can be somewhat acts of God and chance. But I don't think we have an agency out there now that doesn't believe they can do it.
Just one last question, then I'll quit. OSHA in the private sector, is there a state, who's the state equivalent? Does OSHA inspect workplaces in state buildings?
They do, yes. They don't put a priority on that because they have had in the past limited staff that couldn't reach all of the private sector, and so they didn't do it heavily.
Have they been a factor at all?
That's where one of the people was assigned from Department of Insurance Finance to us, and that was a person to help us in the way that we wanted. We're not as interested in state government in safety inspections. They're a factor, but I wouldn't think that I need to put a number on it. I'm learning from the military briefers all the time.
Don't learn.
Yeah. it's a number. Clearly that is not as significant as management doing good management. I mean, that was the hardest message for management to accept in the beginning, was that workers' compensation and worker safety is just, when you do fundamental good management, these things get taken care of. In fact, a story I could relate from a mill, and I don't remember which mill now, I could look in my notes. The guy said that they started doing drug testing. And as they were doing drug testing, they had to teach their managers how to determine whether someone was on drugs. And a spinoff that they never anticipated was that managers started looking at workers they'd never looked at in their lives. And they would see them doing this work and they'd say, gee, that's a dangerous way to do it, or that's not the best way to do it. And they would work with the worker and improve his skills. And the worker said, my manager's paying attention to me for the first time in 20 years. And so the drug issue turned out not to be the very big issue. The big one was that they now had managers who were focusing on management. And I think that that was an issue that's happened here. You know, if you have an MBA, the odds are 99-1 that nobody ever told you you would be responsible for the safety of the people who work for you. And they didn't tell you what to do about it. You may have had a paragraph or a chapter on workers' comp, and that was about it. And so it's not been something that's been taught much. But where the numbers show these kinds of turnarounds, it comes from management saying this is my responsibility. We heard some Neanderthal meetings that SAFE has held where they've gone out and had people come in and talk about work comp. And you sit there in the audience and here are people who are not in state government asking questions like, well, Why don't we hold the worker responsible when he has this accident, you know, when he trips and falls over the floor that we didn't repair or whatever? And the reason I say it's Neanderthal is because that'll never get the job done. The job gets done when management looks at it and says, how am I going to stop workers from tripping and falling? And it may be training, and it may be equipment, and it may be shoes, and it may be floors, it may be all kinds of things. But they'll then work on it together, and the job gets done. It doesn't work either way. If labor sits there and says it's all management's fault, vice versa doesn't work. They got to work together on it. And we really do see that happening. I think we're going to see other spinoffs. We expect to look back, and these things take time to prove, and see fewer employment claims, civil rights and that kind of thing as a result of it. We already see fewer automobile accidents, which we think is a clear result of it. I think we may even see other tort claims come down, because as people begin to focus on managing their jobs well, safety and other things, it's kind of hard to keep it in one narrow little area. You start saying, why shouldn't we use those principles in other areas?
Senator Yee.
Dave, out of the 12 departments we asked to come back and report to us every 6 months, which departments do better than the others, and which ones are worst?
Mental health,
still bad.
Right. They all achieved results comparable to what the state as a whole did, all of them. So they all did great. Mental health are the clear heroes. They were the clear bad guys, and now they're clearly have done a tremendous job. And I've got to tell you, Fairview is now still 30% of the state's losses. That means that, you know, they did this more than 50% reduction in their cost and injuries and so on. But Fairview will be the one we will always have to watch, you and us and everybody. It is true in other states. We called around the nation. We knew we'd find a mental health institution like that that was doing a lot better than Fairview. And we didn't find one. Now Fairview is probably an example to hold up to other states.
Senator Kovach.
Okay, absolutely the last one. I noticed in here you had an article on smoking. Obviously smoking is a major contributor to people not being alert and not being healthy on the job. Same as any other drug use. What are you doing proactively? Do you have any policy on trying to deal proactively with people's actual health condition as they come to work? And is that a factor?
You move into the arena that is called wellness, yeah. And it's the hardest one to prove financial reward from. Because wellness to work has to affect families. We're at General Services looking at, why can't we have our families come in and take defensive driver training? It doesn't cost us any more to have other bodies in the classroom. Wellness the same way. My wife is taking a fitter fat.
Be careful.
Yeah. Learning how to keep me healthy at General Services, even though she doesn't work there. So I think that wellness is an issue that we do have a wellness coordinator group working now. Kate Wood works with them. She can't afford to work on that full time. But General Services is doing a lot. Some agencies are doing a lot in that area. Some aren't believers yet. But we just did a smoking, or are doing a smoking thing called Bag the Dragon. And I think we have two employees who have successfully quit now after some months of that. And when you're only talking 10% or so of the agency, that's pretty good.
I don't suppose there's any correlation between our accident rate and physical health that you're able to determine.
We can prove it beyond question. Anecdotally, we don't have the kind of statistics to prove it otherwise. But Fairview, for example, and I don't want to become, I'll start sounding like a bigot here, and I don't mean it that way at all. A lot of people at Fairview are women who are in their 50s and who are overweight. And then we ask them, and that's clearly a gross generalization, but we ask them then to go lift a patient who may be overweight and is over on a bed like this, and we wonder how come they injured their back.
Mm-hmm.
And they were injuring their backs and other joints at the rate of one-third of the people out there were going on time loss injuries every year. Mm-hmm. That's a one-third disability rate. And now they're buying and have bought and came to the emergency board for money to buy lifting devices so they can help the patient that way. They do a horizontal shower type thing on these people. And they had tables that looked like nothing more than a mortician's table for doing
autopsies.
They were terrible, slippery, dangerous things, and now they have elevated tubs instead, but they can get them in with a lifting device.
Yeah. But still, their physical condition contributes a lot their accident.
That's right. But we're in an interesting age in which we've recognized that we don't just dump people off because they are disabled. And disability includes obesity or a bad back or whatever. And so you very quickly move somebody to say, well, I won't take you because you're not physically fit, and then you'll take them because they are disabled. And so,
except that there's a point at which, and I think we're going to cross that line sometime, where management is going to have to take a proactive role. And aside from it, I was going to get to the question of sexual harassment, types of complaints that might be either on an increase or whatever. But I think there's a point at which management needs to step in and say, if it's me, John, you weigh 342 pounds and you're 5'6 or something, you know, that may have something to do with why you have a bad heart or whatever. It's typical because of the Portland Police Bureau, when I came on 15 years ago, you had to have your weight and height was commensurate, and you went through a fairly arduous physical agility test to get into the process, and you went through a severe medical psychological evaluation. And I can show you people in the police department that haven't seen, you know, a weight bar and exercise room since they came on, and you know, it creates a lot of problems in terms of disabilities. Just to go around with wellness. And you'd think that there would be some additional cost savings in healthcare.
Cost savings, right. I think, clearly. I guess the other issue, though, is it's one of those things that is really a question for government more even than private companies. You know, a private company can come in and say, guys, we're all going to get together and do calisthenics this morning or you're fired. And in some cases, they can do that. We can only do that if we can do that to a private citizen. It's the due process issue that government faces. I can't say to a worker what I could not say to a private citizen.
Except that, you know, some cities, like the city of Denver, for instance, now if you become a police officer in the city of Denver, you sign a legal document when you're hired
going in
that says that you will maintain a certain physical condition and stature. And if you don't, it's a violation of the contract, you're out the door.
Reg Madsen has expressed concern about that. They want to move in that direction. They actually have more injuries in physical training than when they don't do physical training. But that's a good place to have an injury, with a mat under you and somebody's not around with a gun or a knife.
Well, a police officer get a little carried away sometimes. It's okay if you're thumping some citizen. Yeah. It's not obnoxious, but when you're thumping another police officer, it's a different story.
The interaction of all these issues, though, is exactly the crux of the work comp thing. It is a reflection of societal issues and management issues. And I would add that besides Fairview, the one other worry we have for the future is Measure 5. As we tell people, and we already have, we've seen a slight spike in time loss claims in the last quarter. And we didn't have December data on there, but a slight upturn. And I think, but can't prove, that it's related to letting a lot of people know around state government that they may be laid off. I mean, there's nothing more insulting in life than to be told you're doing a good job, but you're fired. And so it causes you to not be quite as, you know, we now go back to that conversation at Fairview, talking to the worker about getting back to work. The worker could care less what you've got to say if he knows you're about to fire him anyway. They don't care anymore. And so I think we'll see an increase in time loss claims in the next months because, in large part, of Measure 5. And except for trying to manage it well, I'm not sure what can be done.
Is any of that anticipated in the projections that you have?
It is, yeah. It is slightly. You can't really be sure what number to put on it. It's also something we've talked when people have talked about closing Fairview. We have worked with mental health to get them to understand that closing Fairview will not close claims. You have like 5 years to turn into a time loss claim after you filed a medical only or a previous one. And I think they could anticipate an increase in claims after they close their doors.
Mr. Chairman. I just want to say when we talk about